Chase Willie and D-Mace, noon hour. Let's go over to Titans World and hear from Mike Vrabel.
An opportunity to be here. Just circumstances of a short week or a bunch of injuries or COVID or being away. So we'll always try to figure out a way to make them get prepared, but just being smart.
How do you evaluate Malik, what you've seen from him in practice so far?
Well, I think he's continued to improve. He's taken the ownership of the show team, and that's where every backup quarterback gets their reps. But still understanding the game plan and still being ready to go. And so I kind of like where that's been the last couple weeks. I thought it was maybe the first week of the season was something that was new for him. And we had a conversation about how he needs to operate and, get those guys to function, whether it's, preparing for the next week's game. So I think it's been good.
Talked a lot about Ryan's toughness yesterday, but to be able to finish in game and kind of step up and make a big throw to Austin late, how important was that? And was he one of those guys who refused to not finish?
Yeah, it would be hard to keep some of those guys from trying to go back in and doing everything that they possibly can to help the football team. Ryan is just one example of that, of many. But he certainly had all intentions of doing everything that he could to get back there. And, with any injury, we've been through this as it relates to us, is how we identify if guys can continue to play. Can they make it worse? Are they going to be able to reasonably do their job? And can they up to the expectations that we have for them? And can they protect themselves? So, when he was able to progress through, big throw, but the few times that we needed to progress, the line gave us that opportunity, so that was also really good to see. And then, Ryan was able to get the ball down there to hoop late.
The use of Malik out wide a couple mm-hmm. of times and on the aborted handoff, was that more product of being shorthanded at the wide receiver position and putting him there, or just trying to put a new wrinkle in and add something else to the
offense? I think probably a little bit of both, wanting to make sure that we're doing things that we think can help us and, Malik's ability. So we'll see what kind of where that package goes. And, thought we had a good play. Thought we really liked, where things were and what it would look like. And unfortunately, we just weren't able to execute on that particular play. But, we'll try to keep doing things that we feel like, can help us and his skill set and seeing where things go.
You talk a lot about how proud you are to coach the guys on this team. When you see – a bunch of your stars picking themselves off the turf and getting back into the game and helping you win in the manner you did yesterday. Was yesterday on the near the top of the list of how proud you've been?
Probably, yeah. You just, I don't think that people realize what they go through, whether, they start in college or you end up in as a professional athlete, the toll that this game takes and, what it can give you, but also, what it can take away from you. And they put a lot in. They compete. It's violent, and just really, got a lot of respect for I would say the majority of these guys that are finding ways no matter what, and just each and every week, far less than 100% during the game, things come up and they get evaluated, and you can just tell that it means a lot to them. So I'm grateful to be able to work with them each every day.
Bud Dupree, he said there a moment, Jones, Mike, with Ben Jones in the tunnel yesterday. What'd you say to him?
I think obviously these things aren't. I just appreciate them, and that'll stay between me and Ben, But you come to work every day. You hear a lot of hours. And you get a lot of respect for guys the way they are as people, the way they are as teammates and players and parents and husbands. And so, to be able to see what it means to these guys, it's not just another game. It's not just a paycheck. So I just really appreciate what they do.
With Bud Dupree, he said that he plays with so much energy because it's contagious and he wants to create other opportunities. When you see him in the game, can you feel a difference in the energy level? And if so, why is that?
Well, I think that we all expect to play hard, whether Bud's in there or not. And, we appreciate Bud's effort, and he does run to the football. But, You know, Jeff Simmons been running to the football. He makes three or four plays down the field. That's the expectation for defensive football, is that you play full tilt to the tackle whenever you're in there. So it was good to have Bud back out there. We're gonna expect to play hard on defense with whoever's out there.
Does Bud allow you to do more things or just do things better?
I don't think it allows us to do things. You know, we don't want to do a whole lot much. You know, I mean, we got a lot of moving parts, and you know, I think where we're at right now is guys starting to understand what we're doing. We didn't give up X plays. A couple times we gave up leverage, but there are a couple of times we were in man coverage and we're really tight. And then the zone execution, I thought, was much better than it was in previous weeks.
Do maybe in a different role in the package you used with him and Andrew Deep, how'd that work?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought he represented himself well in what we asked him to do on early downs, and then he lost leverage on the one with Pittman. But I think with time and understanding, I would see him being able to make that play. But his versatility is great. We'll see where he ends up this week.
How big an adjustment is that for him to move down into the slot like that?
Well, I think you'd have to ask Amani, because it didn't, from the looks of things. Again, this isn't me saying that it's easy or not. It's just from the looks of things, he looked like he handled what we were asking him to do fairly well from a communication and an execution. So I think that would have to be a great question for him, just to say, but going into the game, I think whether he played there or not, he would be able to tell you what the corner had, what the nickel had, and what the safety has pretty much on every call that we have.
On the coaching end of that, when you guys come up with that and install it during the week and then see it work successfully, not how gratifying it is, but how much fun is that part of the job, to kind of craft something and then see it come to fruition?
Well, I think what's gratifying is that you see improvement from players. That's where coaches get the satisfaction. You know, you try to spend countless hours, thinking about technique, thinking about, hey, how would I do this? How would we expect the player to reasonably do this? They use the technique. It works. They have success. You continue to build small victories, and then you can make significant changes because there's buy-in. When players see improvement, they know that you can help them and that they trust you, and then we're all working on the same page. But, we don't sit around and pat ourselves on the back. That's not what we're about. We're trying to help the players and make sure that we're putting them in positions to help them succeed, and they go out and execute.
Beyond Randy being 4-for-4 on field goals, was yesterday maybe one of the better all-around days for special teams? It seemed like that the coverage units won the field position battle.
Yeah, they did. I think we could punt better. I think we could cover punts better. I didn't like some of those longer returns. But we ran down there on kickoff with speed. Unfortunately, we had the penalty on kickoff return. So you're giving it probably a little better review than maybe I am. But Randy, that was great to see. We had one good return with Hassan, who continues to run hard back there and break some arm tackles, and just unfortunate that, we start with the penalty. So there's a lot of things to improve on, but I appreciate your optimism.
Which of the zone execution was better yesterday? Why did it improve?
Well, because we didn't get the ball thrown over our head, or we weren't covering guys at 3 or 4 yards. There was some instances in the first game where we were, just jumping down on things and, giving them some easy throws over our head. And, we forced the ball to be thrown in front. And, when the longest play is 20 yards and the next couple are 14, you make them earn it, which then opens up more opportunities for us to affect the quarterback or knock the football out or intercept it. But when you have these long, explosive plays, it changes field position. Now they're in the red zone, and they're in their scheme plays and everything else. So that was probably just forcing them to throw it underneath and be able to break and tackle and go from there.
So like individual improvement, just not making mistakes, or communication collectively?
I think just overall understanding of what it is that has to happen in each coverage, the coverage understanding, and you know, again, they on the touchdown, on Andrew's touchdown, there was great communication. I think Kevin made a check, and you could see guys quickly get into position. The ball was then snapped, and then ultimately they executed the call. So that's, I think, a great example of, you know, being able to adjust and the players communicating, getting lined up, and then ultimately executing the play for a big play.
Take away the kneel down. You guys ran Derek 15 of 19 second down. So do you say, hey, we won and that worked, that's our identity? Or do you say, hey, in high, you know, going forward, we need to mix it up?
We're going to try to do whatever we can do to win the football game each and every week. That's what I would continue to say.
Moving Amani down into the slot kind of helped Roger go outside a little bit more. What was your assessment of him kind of making that adjustment, taking the majority of his snaps outside?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was, you know, fairly competitive. Lost the leverage on the one inside, but that wasn't like he was playing outside. He went in and stabbed the ball from Pierce on the strike. Didn't swat at it, didn't foul him, was square at the top, and went through and did what we coach him to do.
The ball yesterday, and obviously it paid off at the end with Terrence. Where's the balance on that with making the tackle and punching away at it?
Well, I think every time when you go to make a tackle, you have to figure out what position you're in. You know, are you in an open field tackle where the objective is just to get him on the ground? And if you ask any of our players in an open field situation, the clear objective is to find a way to get him on the ground and not cause a fumble, we don't need a big hit. We need to make sure that he ends up on the ground. Or is it a vice tackle? Are you working with another player? And then you want to come inside out, and the first guy is going to keep his angle, and the second guy in is going to try to hammer at the ball. Is it a defensive lineman that's chasing from inside out? Or is it a box tackle, you know, where, you know, there's not a whole lot of space and, you know, you're in between the tackles. So there's a lot of different situations. I think you see us work in the open field. But when there's another guy around and you're in a vice tackle situation, we really want you, you know, trying to focus on the football.
Worry Bud's going to miss and kill somebody at some point? I mean, he's throwing haymakers at the football.
Well, I know that they're, you know, him and Jeff were running down there chasing the football. And, you know, we just have to hope that it continues to maybe it comes out.
Robert Woods has made the most of his opportunities, and have you seen him make some tough catches across the middle in the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think Robert is doing, you know, everything that we asked him to do. It felt like he was open on the strike. Ryan saw, you know, thought that there was a little bit of traffic, so he progressed through and hit Cody for our longest gain of the day. I thought he blocked well. You know, Ryan pulled it, and he was protecting the quarterback. And did have some tough catches in traffic. You know, talk to him about reaching the ball. You know, I don't think we need to do that, but you know, being able to take the contact and being available over the middle is certainly a great quality.
Raiden's show product.
How did Raiden's do in his start yesterday versus compared to his start 2 weeks ago against Washington?
I mean, I think it was about the same. I don't, you know, I think, you know, there were some plays that, you know, that need to be better. You know, there are some plays there that, you know, we would expect him to be able to make and be able to adjust to. But then there were other plays where he was, you know, was good. He helped us in a run game, and or he replaced his hands and, you know, had the penalty, which, you know, that isn't something that we're looking for, but is going to happen. And I'm sure he was geared up, ready to go. But we just have to fix those things and, you know, make sure that they don't hurt us the next time.
Were you going to snap it down there when he jumped?
Guess we'll never know, Jim.
Any practice windows opening this week, Mike, Elijah, or anyone else?
It's only Monday, so I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell you that, hopefully.
Schobert, I guess, elevated three times. What's kind of been your eval on him, and do you see him as a guy that might get, you know, signed permanently? Or
We would have most of the week to decide that. But I think he's done what we've asked him to do, is play a couple different positions, which he has. He's played on the edge for us, played inside, helped us on some special teams. And, you know, so we'll see where it is on as the week progresses and see who's available and see who we we need for the game.
What made Eric Smith appealing?
Same thing a lot of guys do. They come in and have a good workout and continuing to add some players at positions that we want to try to get some depth at.
So that's Mike Vrabel talking. Eric Smith is an offensive tackle, offensive lineman who's played guard and tackle four NFL games. They picked him up just for depth. We'll see where it goes. Mm-hmm. When they picked up Andrew Adams, it seemed like just a depth guy, or Terrence Mitchell, and those guys are playing big roles now.
Josh Gordon.
Never know. Josh Gordon, they're going to win the other way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's Mike Vrabel today. When we come back, we'll hear what he said specifically, if you missed the beginning, about Ryan Tannehill, what little we do know and where it goes from here, and break down a couple other highlights from today's press conference. Stay tuned. You're listening to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.
Limited or can't go for a day or two, how much harder is it to not have that guy at that position versus maybe some other positions for practice?
Well, I mean, I think we need everybody. You know, the quarterback, you know, is vital to the execution. You know, we'll continue to see where Ryan is, and we'll get everybody ready that we feel like needs to get ready.
The first several questions, as you can imagine, were all about Ryan Tannehill. Just trying to, all you can do is try to read what Mike Vrabel is saying. Did you read anything in? It sounds like just from the words he's using, there is concern for sure. He certainly was not closing down any questions about Malik Willis at the position. He talked a lot about Malik Willis. He's making progress, running the scout team, or as he calls it, the show team, learning the game plan. But as we've been saying for weeks, it's really hard to know how Malik Willis is progressing, and you won't really know until he's got to get in there. And it's too early to tell whether they're going there, but it seemed to me, just in listening to Mike Vrabel there, that they have to be prepared for some different things this week, depending on how the ankle reacts.
Well, yeah, they're going to have to. You know, obviously you would want Ryan Tannehill to be able to practice every day, but you know, if his ankle doesn't allow him to do that, then now you got to start thinking, you know, long term, meaning how do we need to change our offense any, you know, ahead of this Houston game? That's what I mean by long term. I don't mean, you know, two or three games more. I'm just saying for this game, what do we do offensively that we can cater more toward Malik Willis' skill set, what he can do as a passer and a runner? How do we scale down our offense a little bit, or how do we give this misdirection in our offense? Because, you know, now it's a double problem. Because your offensive line is not blocking well, then you got a rookie quarterback underneath center. I've never seen in a situation like that that it works out. So they're trying to – they need to know, you know, I guess by Wednesday, because that would be the first day they practice. Today is sort of like a, you know, go over the film, get treatment, corrections, and you know, shake out, which means run a little bit. Whatnot, and then tomorrow's off, and they come back Wednesday to install the first part of their offense. So if Ryan is not available for Wednesday, then you have to, as a coordinator and a head coach, you have to start thinking about alternatives. How do we tweak this game plan so that we can put Malik Willis in the best position to succeed as a quarterback, considering our offensive line hasn't been good this year. They've been okay, but they haven't, you know, we haven't been able to lean on them when it comes to pass blocking. So, yeah, I think we just need to watch the whole, you know, we need to listen to Vrabel, because he's going to be asked a lot of questions moving forward about Ryan Tannehill. Can he play? Did he practice? How did he look? Yada, yada, yada. So we just need to listen to what he's saying in these interviews, because he'll tell you in a subtle way, he'll tell you whether, hey, listen, he can go, or, all right, we need to get Malik Willis up to speed, and we need to possibly scale down our offense a little bit.
I don't think that you have to know today, but but you have to prepare for a number of different ways it can go, depending on how the injury reacts the next couple of days. He has a pretty good idea how Ryan Tannehill is feeling today, I'm sure. And the one little subtle hint he gave, he said he may have a lighter week getting ready for Houston. And that you said this last hour. It's very possible he won't practice at all, or not, at least not until Friday, maybe. But the question is, can he move?
Yeah.
And so there will be an opportunity for Malik Willis probably to get a lot of reps this week. And so they don't have to say anything until Wednesday. But, man, I'd really be surprised if he can practice much on Wednesday. I'll be pleasantly surprised if that's the case. But as we were saying before, it looks like a classic high ankle to me. Now, they didn't say anything like that. And I don't think they have to specify high ankle versus any other kind. Like, if his ankle was broken or something, he would not have been able to come back in the game. It looks like a twisted ankle of some sort. They taped it up. But the way it turned looks to me like the high ankle, which is a longer recovery.
Yeah.
Like, for example, David Njoku, who was having a couple of pretty good games for the Browns, it was having an excellent game yesterday, has a high ankle sprain. And they said he is out for 2 to 5 weeks. Now, there's different degrees, of course, but 2 to 5 weeks for a high ankle sprain is not unusual. Also on the injury front, Breece Hall for the Jets, who was having a really good rookie season. One of the reasons why the Jets have made a big step forward, they won again yesterday. They won in Denver. So they've won in Green Bay and in Denver, the Jets, in back-to-back weeks. Torn ACL, out for the season for Breece Hall. Not good news for the Jets. And Mike Williams, also another, he got, that looked really bad. He got twisted all around his knee, ankle, so that doesn't look, he's going to have an MRI on the ankle for the Chargers. So the Chargers, who are a lot of people's sexy Super Bowl pick,
doesn't look that
looking
way.
Too good.
I mean, they still got to win a record of 4-3, but I mean, that division, 4-3 ain't gonna get you first place, I tell you that. You know, the Titans have had their injuries. But the good thing about what has happened to them, say Harold Landry, for instance. Well, Harold Landry got hurt before the season starts, so they were able to adjust to him not being there. And we see the defense. They're fine. Now, they would be much better with Harold Landry, but this is a good defense. You know, Amani Hooker has missed some games, but it wasn't to the point where he was going to be gone 4, 5, 6 games. He missed a couple of games because of concussion, but the defense still held their own. Offensively, this is where they can't continue to have these injuries because Taylor Lewan goes down. Now, was Taylor playing great? No, but he was a staple on that left side. And he brought energy and he brought an attitude. So you felt good with Taylor on that side. But you can't, you know, continue to throw Dylan Raitens in there because you're, you know, Nate Davis is injured. If Ryan Tannehill goes down, then you got to go to Malik Willis. At this stage, I don't know if he's ready to be that guy, you know, for more than 1 or 2 games. I just don't. I think the kid would be good eventually, but I just don't think he's ready right now.
Yeah, that's
and his offense is not equipped for him to shoulder the load. You know,
it's maybe Ryan. To start with.
Yeah, Ryan, yes, but Malik Willis, no.
That is an issue if that becomes something, and I gotta think this is going to be an interesting week to watch. Stay tuned. We'll have more coming. We'll talk about the defensive side, some of the things that Mike Vrabel said about his team's defense when we return on the other side here on 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Chase Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Follow us on Instagram at 102.5 The Game Nashville. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. D-Mace, I listened to Mike Vrabel. I think he's pretty excited about the defense, cautiously so. But He did take some time to talk about tackling. He talked about utilizing players in different roles, such as Amani Hooker, basically becoming the nickelback so that they could use Adams in a role that he was more comfortable in. It is good. I mean, you look back when they lost Harold Landry.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was looking at Rashad Weaver, who's played pretty well, but the key move was moving Autry out there and using more Tierre Tart in the mm-hmm. middle, who's turned into a really good player. So they've done a very good job moving the pieces around. And he said the key is understanding the defense, understanding what we're doing. Yesterday, they played it to a T. They pressured the passer. They gave up basically no explosive plays to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing got behind them. And if there's one thing that I think he was upset about, the way the defense was playing before that, they gave up a few too many of those.
Mm-hmm.
Washington got a couple. You know, if you cannot give up those long plays that change field position, he says, then you go a long way to winning games. And so he likes the fact that there's a good understanding of that with the defense. They trust the coaching staff. There's good communication. So I think you got a good thing going right now. And even he was asked about Bud Dupree, and he was basically saying, look, it's not about one guy coming back mm-hmm. in. It's just about collectively everybody understanding. And, you know, obviously Bud Dupree does make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, Bud does make a difference. But I think Coach Vrabel is telling everyone, listen, this defense that we have, outside of Jeffrey Simmons, because he's the one true, like, you lose Jeffrey Simmons now, the defense might change.
Some. Yes.
Or it will, not might, it will. But everyone else, I don't want to say they're interchangeable, but they are, you know. It's hard to say they're interchangeable because I know, you know, watching them, I know every guy brings sort of this skill level to the defense, and they're playing within the scheme of the defense. They're not trying to do, when the Titans give up big plays, they try to do, like in the first game with the Giants. If Bud Dupree doesn't, if he holds the line of scrimmage, if he holds, you know, if he stays outside instead of trying to slip in and make the tackle, Saquon Barkley doesn't get 65 yards. But he's trying to do more than what the defense is asking him. He's trying to be a hero, and he jumps inside, runs it to Jeffrey Simmons, and away Saquon goes to 60-something yards. What Vrabel is saying is, just do your job. This defense is built on guys just doing their job. Don't do no more than what we are asking you. I don't care if you're Jeffrey Simmons. Jeffrey Simmons, if you do your job, you're going to be one of the best interior lineman in the NFL. And he is. Why?
I thought he was incredible. Because
he's doing his job.
Yep.
He's not trying to do everybody else's job. His job is making everybody else's job easier, but he's doing what he do. Bud Dupree can't deviate from that. Tierre Tart can't deviate from that. You know, Weaver can't. We put you in here. You do what we ask you to do. You will make a play. Don't worry about it. Just don't give up anything over your head. And what has this defense been able to do? Make plays when they needed to. Why? Because guys have been in a position to make that play. Why? Because they're doing exactly what coach wants them to do. Nothing more, nothing less. They're playing 100% within their little circle. They're playing 100%. Now the guy next to you in his own circle has to play 100% and try not to get in yours.
And that's when really good defenses come
exactly.
together.
Yeah.
When you have that great understanding of everybody's job. He was talking about Amani Hooker understands the different roles, so that makes it easier for him to switch mm-hmm. and play a different spot. All that being said, you know, we know that there's a big decision with Bud Dupree coming at the end of the season. He makes so much money.
Mm-hmm.
That was an impactful game, I thought, for him. He had a lot of pressures. I saw a stat. The guy we had on from ESPN, the analytics guy mm-hmm. that we had on last week, he put a list of guys who had the most wins in mm-hmm. pass rushing. You know, you can look at it that way or just do the eye test. It didn't all show up, but for example, the pick six, that's a heavy pressure for Bud Dupree. He wasn't blocked,
mm-hmm.
but he did have a sack. He had other times where he was just in there. He was forcing Ryan to make quick, tough decisions.
Yes.
So I thought he... Boy, if we could bottle that up Just give me that every week. I feel really good about the pass rush, even without Harold Landry.
Yeah, and that's and that's what you're getting from this team. You're getting guys doing what they're supposed to do, and but doing it aggressively and, you know, full speed. They know.
But do you think he's a difference maker when he's right? Mike Vrabel was kind of hesitant to sort of give him a lot of praise with a couple of questions that had that effect.
Difference. I consider Jeffrey Simmons a difference maker.
There's no question about
that. I consider Kevin Byard a difference maker. Bud Dupree, if he's doing what he's supposed to do, he can make a difference in the game. But he's not making those other guys better.
So it sounds to me like down the road with his price tag, he may or may not, he may not be worth that long term.
There's a possibility because this team, because this defense operates well with just about, you could put another good player in there and they're still,
he's replaceable.
He's still for a lesser
number
because of the way they run their defense and what coach is asking of them within the defense. Again, he's not asking them to do anything that is outside of the framework of what they can do or their ability to do it. He's saying, I'm putting you here for a specific reason because your ability to play the game within this little space is what we're looking for. That's it. We're not asking you to do anything else. And I just think Bud Dupree, don't be surprised if come trade deadline, he's one of those guys that could potentially be traded.
Bud Dupree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But who would take on that cap number this year? That would be my question.
The Titans don't want to take it on next year.
Yeah, well, but next year is next year. I
know.
I'd be you're but trying I, to. I just but I look can't at the, see them doing that though.
I understand it. I couldn't see them getting rid of AJ Brown either. But they did. My thing is, if you watch a team, and this goes back. That's why I think when you look at New England Patriots. You were not surprised when they cut X guy or X guy or X guy.
They did it. It was many just like times,
okay, because the next guy, the defense never seemed, the team never seems to get
Richard
affected.
Seymour was a big
exactly
one, right.
Even though Richard Seymour's a Hall of Famer now, it was like okay, we're going to the next one. We hate to lose them, but we're going to the next. And they were always able to operate at such a high level defensively. I think Vrabel's that same way. Listen, we would like to have you. But not having you doesn't cripple our defense. There's only one guy on that defense. If they didn't have, it would cripple it. And that's Jeffrey Simmons.
Jeffrey Simmons, yeah. No question.
I mean, Kevin Byard to an extent, I think. But because they got Amani Hooker, I think, you know, maybe for a game or two they could be good without him. But Jeffrey Simmons is the one guy that's not replaceable.
When we come back, we will talk about the Predators. It
yes,
has not
please.
Gone well. They have a little time to regroup, and they need to regroup. Their next action is Thursday against a very good St. Louis Blues team. They've got two more home games on this homestand, then a big, challenging road trip coming up around the corner. We'll talk about them when we come back here on Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game.
Back at you, 102.5, The Game, Willie, Chase, and D-Mace here, talking everything sports. We had a good sport weekend this week. Well, at least we did when it came to football. But Willie.
Depending on who you're rooting for.
Yeah, depending on who you're rooting for. Like I was rooting for Syracuse, and they.
Oh, man.
Let's not talk about that. But what is going on? I mean. Through six games now. Is it six?
Seven.
Seven. They've dropped the last five.
The Preds.
After going 0-2 to Preds. After going 2-0, they dropped the last five games, man. And it doesn't seem like with St. Louis coming in, it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better.
Well, it's going to be a challenge. This is a good crossroads here. They have the day off today. Or maybe some community service. I think they're practicing again tomorrow. They got two 2 days of practice before St. Louis comes in. It's a break in the schedule. Yeah, they've got some things to figure out. It was really frustrating, Derek, on Saturday night because they had a really good crowd. They had the celebration for David Poile. I thought they came out, and they got hit by one of the things that happens a lot of times in hockey games. The last three games, since they had the two bad games against the Stars, they've come back with three games that have all been very different. The first two, they lost leads in different ways. And then Saturday, they fell behind early. And I thought that, and the stat sheet will tell you, they controlled the play from start to finish. They dominated the faceoff circle. They had way more shot attempts. They, generally speaking, had more chances. But they didn't turn it into any goals. You got to give Carter Hart a lot of credit. Philadelphia's got a good structure, good identity. Right now, the Predators have to be a better team than the Flyers over the course of the season, and they dropped one. So it's like if it's not one thing, it's the other right now. I actually think they played more the way they wanted to play in terms of getting shots, getting good shots, winning faceoffs, getting possession of the puck. They did a lot of those things, but it's puzzling how that works in hockey sometimes. Now, the one thing that I said after the game, they didn't get enough quality chances. They had chances. They had more chances than Philadelphia. Philadelphia took advantage of their chances. That's one way you can win a hockey game.
What do you mean by quality chances? Are you talking about power play or inside the, you know, in the scoring area?
I would say in all phases of the game. Okay. I think there's different websites, different coaches, and then there's just the eyeball test, just like we all have, and just say, like, there's different ways to keep scoring chances. SportLogic is one that we watch during our broadcast. They have scoring chances, and they have them broken down, A, B, C. I showed you Natural Stat Trick. Mm-hmm. They've got chances, and then they've got high danger chances.
Mm-hmm.
That all depends on where the shot is coming from. So they've got different measures. And then you and I could just sit down and watching a game and keep scoring chances, right? And you might watch a period and say, I had 3-2 Predators. I might watch the same hockey game and say, well, I had it 4-3 Flyers. You know, okay. It just depends on what you and I think is a chance. So each coaching staff has their way of doing it. The way I saw it on Saturday was the Predators had good chances. They had decent chances. They didn't get the great as many great chances as you would hope to get, given the fact that they had 70, I think it was 75 shot attempts, and the Flyers only had 44. Like, if you tell me, let's play a game, I'm going to get 75 shots, you get 44. Regardless of the quality of those shots or where those shots are coming from, I like my chances.
Exactly.
Right? I have a better chance. But the quality is important. And what you do with it, you got to execute the chance, right? Mm-hmm. Just because I give you a chance doesn't mean you're going to score. The goalie has something to do with it. So there's a lot of things that go into it. I would say of the three games that they lost last week, Los Angeles, where they lost in the shootout, Columbus, where they lost on Thursday and lost the lead 3-1 in the third period, and then Saturday, where they really trailed the whole game, I would say they played by far the best Saturday, but the result is the same. So that's the thing that has you scratching your head, is you say, you know, over the course of the season, if you play like that, like you did on Saturday, you should win your share of games. But, boy, is it frustrating in the moment because the crowd's going, what's going on? Hey, you've now lost five in a row. Mm-hmm. You can't beat the Blue Jackets. You can't beat the Flyers. How are you going to beat the Blues? You know, that's going to be the question everybody's asking this week, but hopefully that will bring something better out of them.
Now, what do you think? Because in situations like this, I mean, we can always, I mean, the easiest thing is, well, let's point to the head coach, or let's point to the goalie, because, you know, he's given up, you know, 3, 4, 5 goals, you know.
Yeah.
That's easy to sort of point at those two individuals, but it has to be more than that.
It does. A lot of people are are questioning John Hines, right? Okay. That's just that's going to be how it goes. They're going to go after the coach. And you mentioned the goalie. That's the next easiest thing everybody points at. UC Saros has a lot of credibility. He's got a great track record. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's been at his best. He's been okay. The numbers would suggest he hasn't given up any soft goals at all. But when he's on, he makes everybody better. He's a Jeffrey Simmons. He's a Derrick Henry. He's a guy that elevates everybody around him. I don't think he's really gotten into that groove yet. He's been a slow starter at times in his career. There have been some slow starts under John Hines for the season. Last year, 1-4. The year before that, I want to say they were 2-4-1, something like that. So they've had some slow starts, and they've been able to work their way out of it. There's still plenty of time. But, you know, you're disappointed that you're missing opportunities, I think, to get points. That was an opportunity last week where you felt like you should get some points. Mm-hmm. If you play good hockey, the teams you're playing, where you're playing them, the fact that your team right now, knock on wood, is pretty healthy. To me, the bigger thing is not that they lost, but they lost opportunity to really get off to a good start, pad some points, bank some points early. They did that in Prague against a weak Sharks team.
Mm-hmm.
But they missed a big opportunity last week. I thought that they just did not play the way they were capable of for the week as a whole. So they'll have to just make up for it somewhere along the line. I think that they can, but they've just got to be better. But I thought they played the right way on Saturday, just did not get rewarded. And Carter Hart is 4-0 for a reason. He's played four games for the Flyers, and he's been lights out in all four. They had beaten Tampa early in the week, the previous game he had played, and I just thought he played another really solid game on Saturday night, and it was enough for the Flyers to win.
Well, they're going to have to do something moving forward.
Yes, they do.
The Predators, because, you know, you don't want to get into this situation. And I know it's early in the season, but you don't want to look, you know, 15, 20 games in and find yourself in the same situation or with the same problems that you had at the beginning of the season. I'm confident that they got enough good players on this team, enough leaders on this team that they get it turned around. Now, how quickly will that happen? I don't know.
Roman Josi is a good example. He's got 1 point. Uh-huh. He's got no goals, one assist. But he's getting more shots. Like last Saturday, he had a ton of shot attempts. He was firing pucks at the net all over the place. And that's not the only way that he creates offense. He creates it with skating and moving. So I thought he did a lot of the things that he does when he puts up points. Nothing's going in right now for him. I got to believe that will come around. If anything, I think players like him are almost trying to do a little too much. Maybe they're trying too hard to get it right. So, you know, it's really head-scratching when you're in one of those moments, and there's such a fine line between everything clicking, you're feeling so good about everything, which was the feeling in Prague, and now feeling like, what's going on? We can't do anything right, or we can't get any results right now. What's the deal? That's where you got to stick to it over the long haul. Let's take the baseball. Mm-hmm. The Braves, they could do no wrong for 4 months.
then all of a sudden,
here come the Phillies, who fired their manager after 50 games. They got swept late in the season by the Cubs, and it looked like they might not even make the playoffs. They barely get in. And now they've been on a complete roll. It's really weird how it can switch in a hurry. I think that's what the Predators have to hope for. Stay with your process. One game at a time. Hopefully you can come out and play a good game on Thursday. But they've got to get it under control quick here, because you don't want to build too big of a hole to where it really gets out of control. You can deal with five games. Most teams are going to have a stretch where you don't play well for a 5 to 10 game stretch. The Edmonton Oilers last year went through a month, 6 weeks of just misery. They fired their coach. Nobody knew what was going on, and all of a sudden they find themselves in the Western Conference Final by the end of the season. So there's a lot of twists and turns to a hockey season, but tough times for the Predators right now.
Well, I said something earlier in the show, that needed to happen, and it has happened. So I'm gonna tell you what I was talking about when we get back. Ooh, you're listening to 102.5, okay. The Game.